It's a dream that's taken some two decades to realise and many moments of despair along the way. But work will start soon on earthquake strengthening Whanganui's historic Sargent Art Gallery and building an extension behind it. Just before Christmas, the government announced a $10 million contribution from the Regional Culture and Heritage Fund towards the $34.9 million redevelopment. I went to the emptied Sargent Gallery on Tuesday to meet its director, Greg Anderson, curator, Jennifer Taylor-Moore, and chief fundraiser, Nicola Williams, who still has another $3 million plus to raise, but is super confident. We have a big photo gallery for you to look at on the Standing Room Only webpage. Greg Anderson kicks off the tour with a warning.
Housekeeping. It's a highly earthquake-prone building at 5%, so around the building you'll see these highly strengthened steel and hardwood tables. If the worst happens, unlikely to, but if it does, you head straight for one of these and you'll be safe within. And then afterwards, when the shaking stops, of course you leave. But that's the drill. It's a rather pale imitation of its former self at the moment. But
we
still
can appreciate the architecture,
building.
Though. Yeah, we can, can't, because it's so stunning. Because we're just beginning our journey here, I think this is, we're sitting here, we can start of the history of it and the fabulous Henry. Can we all do with another Henry Sargent in our lives at the moment? But can I have a synopsis, a brief history of the building?
Henry was a farmer and a businessman in Whanganui. He was married. And when he died, like all good philanthropists and Victorian gentlemen of his type, he left his fortune to the city to build an art gallery and to furnish it with a collection. Henry had no children, so therefore he left his money to the city. His wife, Ellen, who was considerably younger than he, remarried not long after Henry's death, and it was her job to go to Europe with her new husband and to source work for the collection. There was a large architectural competition in order to design and build the place, and that was won by a young architect by the name of Donald Hosey from Dunedin. Hosey was a 21-year-old at the time, and this was in 1916. And, of course, like all other young men at the time, he was destined to go to the front in Europe. But the mayor at the time, Mayor Mackey, managed to keep him back for just long enough for him to be able to complete his drawings for the building. So the process duly happened, and the building work eventually commenced. And it was only about, I think, 2 months after the building had started in 1917, that Hosey was killed at the front. So he never got to see his building built. He never got to hear it described as a Rolls-Royce of art galleries. And what we're building on is his legacy as much as Henry's. But Henry's gift was a substantial one. He gave, I think, £32,000 to the city. One way of looking at what that contribution means now is that as a percentage of GDP, that kind of contribution now equates to something like $70-odd million. So it's a huge illustration of Henry's confidence in the future of the gallery and the future of Whanganui. And I guess that's what we're doing again now. So Henry realised at the time that Whanganui was a burgeoning city. It was one of the largest cities in New Zealand at that time and had a great future ahead of it. And, of course, as all cities need to do, they need to have a quality art gallery, they have museums and opera houses and all these things. All these things which Whanganui now has, and the kinds of facilities which are, of course, out of proportion to the size of a town like we have now, but which are entirely appropriate for a much grander city, which, unfortunately, Whanganui never became. But we have this fantastic legacy. We're building on it, and that's one of the city's points of difference, is we have this fantastic cultural heart at which the Sargent sits. And we have wonderful museums. We have the Opera House. We have the War Memorial Hall. We have the importance of the river and the richness of the iwi culture around that. So Whanganui has an enormous amount to give, but it also, a lot of it stems, particularly from, in Sargent's terms, from the original gift from Henry Sargent.
Well, let's have a walk through a building that is, even without the exhibits, it's an achingly beautiful building, isn't it?
It is a very beautiful building, and it's one of the few purpose-built art galleries in New Zealand. And when it was designed at the time, it really was the Rolls-Royce of art galleries. It was, everything about it was new and state-of-the-art at the time, right from the natural lighting that you see above us, which was designed by Samuel Hirst Seeger, who was well-regarded and who lectured in the United States and in Europe in terms of his lighting design. And, of course, the building is a beautiful frame for the artwork within. And it's an interesting thing, you say, when it's empty, you notice the architecture, and it is splendid. However, when the building was in use and when there was installations within the dome and artworks on the wall, the artwork was always the first thing you saw. The building always took second place, and I guess that was a testament to the quality of the architecture.
We're here in essentially the foyer. Is anything dramatic going to be happening in this area with the redevelopment or with this core building? Is it more strengthening rather than mucking around with it?
It is strengthening. I mean, what will happen ultimately is that we'll be strengthening the building using base isolators. Some of the internal walls will be replaced. It's an unreinforced double brick building, so some of the strategic walls will be replaced with steel reinforced concrete for stability's sake. But what will really happen when you come back in here once the redevelopment is complete is you won't notice any difference. The quality of the engineering and the architectural work which will be taking place in this building means that all of the work which is going to occur, which will seismically strengthen the place, will be completely invisible. You'll never know that anything has changed. The only change you might see is some of the decorative plasterwork around the building will be much sharper because it will be all cleaned up and put back to its original state. Even the flooring will be taken up and replaced with the original flooring. Once the foundation in the basement area has been relayed and the base isolators put in, all the existing Matai flooring will be put back as it was.
Over the last 100 years, has the building been much changed? Because I know in some of the other big redevelopments, they have uncovered things and taken it back to what it would have looked like more originally, because over the years, directors have wanted to stamp their own mark on a building and things have gone in and out of fashion. What about with this one?
The major changes have been installing a lift, which I believe was put in the late 70s.
And that's very sensible. Yeah, that needs to stay.
It's in fact not a lift, it's a hoist, but looks like a lift. And there are now public toilets, two of them. And the basement area, I think it was during the 60s, I could be wrong about that, but the basement area was excavated and to allow space for, some collection space, which you'll see when we go downstairs. I don't believe that space was ever adequate for what collection existed at that time, and certainly one of the reasons why we had to leave the building, apart from the earthquake proneness, is that the collection was suffering badly in that space. It's now in a temporary located space at 31 Table Quay. But while it was here, it was in certainly, I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say the conditions were pretty dire downstairs. But now the collection is well looked after and will be once the redevelopment takes place.
And here's the dome. Now that's one of the great characteristics of this building, isn't it? And it's a real landmark for
It's a fantastic space.
Wanganui. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's a 13-metre high dome, and at the centre of which, up until Billy Apple shifted the wrestlers from the centre of the dome, it freed this fantastic space for more contemporary exhibitions. So from that day to this, well, from that day until we vacated the building, this was our principal space for major installations.
Beautiful space, like a concert hall, really, a feeling to this in some ways.
Well, it's intricate. We have had numerous concerts here and recitals. It's a fantastic space for that.
Acoustics, testing. Yeah, the acoustics are pretty good, even empty. Look, the work that you've done is phenomenal. As we walk through here and find out more about what's going to be done, I mean, the fundraising that you've been involved with, were you ever overwhelmed by it? It's a lot of money to raise for, you know, a small city.
Yeah, well, Greg and I, we certainly have had our ups and downs during the capital raising campaign. It has been very difficult, especially at the beginning when we really didn't have the support of this region behind us. Most of that was caused by misinformation. So we spent a huge amount of energy on community engagement, and we were able to get a weekly complimentary column in the Whanganui newspaper. And those stories which we our gallery staff would write, we'd also weave in our key messages and they were all the facts all around what the development was all about and how it was going to be achieved, and the fact that it wasn't going to impact majorly on ratepayers, and it was going to be have a very serious and a very worthwhile economic impact on this region.
Boy, that's pretty tough. So not only raising money, but getting the region back on side, that's huge.
I'd say 60 or 70% of our time has actually been lobbying local government. And then we've had two local government elections and two central government elections. And we've had all the staff that go under the ministers or the councillors to, you know, brief again and start from square one. So at times it has been very difficult. But at the beginning, I have to say that a lot of the people we addressed were openly hostile and very, very against the project. But we, when they got the facts, they had the aha moment.
Right up until the point when they finally understood why we were doing this, how we were doing it. And once they'd been given these facts, as Nicola said, then suddenly there became an acceptance of what we were doing. And many of those who'd been our biggest detractors, in fact, ended up as paying supporters. So clearly we were doing something right, but we had to do a lot of that to start with, because as Nicola said, it was critical that we got a good base of general public support before we could go out to any of the major benefactors or to any large funding bodies and say, this is what we want to do.
So how much money has been raised?
It's in the realm of about $32 million, yeah. We've got a new fundraising campaign now that we have the government formal acceptance.
That was just the end of last year, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's been a collective sigh, really.
20th of December.
Yeah, it was a milestone, one we've been working towards for so many years, and it's been on the minds of our supporters for an incredibly long time. And it was hugely satisfying to finally get it, and we were really thankful to those funders and government who had faith in what we were doing, but also to the many people. And there are many, many people who worked on getting those enormous applications together.
We've been very strategic in our approaches for fundraising. We've really gone to people who either have a long history, because most of the funds have been raised from outside the region, have a long history with the Whanganui region, old families. Also, we've gone to people who are art benefactors and people also who value this building because it's absolutely unique in the world, and architects globally rave about the neoclassical design and the way the pivotal place it sits between the mountains and the sea and the connection to iwi. So there's so many different levels and that we could talk about there.
Okay, I can see that there's work is starting. We've got paint pails taped into.
No,
what are they?
Jennifer.
They were once paint pails. It's not an artwork I've just insulted, is it?
No, not an artwork at all. It's more about safety, to be honest. In the last sort of month or so of us operating out of this building, cracks were starting to appear in the plaster surface of the walls. And one day, one of the cracks that was visible at 5 p.m. overnight, a whole chunk of concrete dropped from the ceiling onto the floor. And ironically, it was directly over a marble bust of our benefactor, Henry Sargent. And when the concrete fell to the ground, it grazed his shoulder and dented the plinth that he was sitting on and smashed on the floor. So when that happened, we closed the building and we had engineers come in and inspect the building, and they scraped back what seemed like hairline cracks in the plaster, and they found some quite substantial cracks in support beams. So what we're looking at here are support beams in the ceiling with huge cracks right through them, and they have placed sheets of glass, taped them to go over the cracks so that we know that if the building shifts, the glass will break and we'll know that we obviously can't be in here. And so what you can see on the floor, these what look like paint pots, are actually reminding you there's glass directly above you and please don't stand below just in case the glass shatters and lands on your head. Because the building is formed in the shape of a Greek cross sort of design, it's very symmetrical, so we can assume that the big cracks through the ceiling beams here will probably be repeated in other parts of the building as well. It's just further indication of the need to do this redevelopment project and to make sure that this building is safe and will, you know, stand the test of time for another 100 years.
when we walk around, there's large boreholes all the way through the walls. We didn't immediately jump to the conclusion that base isolating was the correct response for this building. A lot of engineering work was done on the fabric of the building to test the strength of the bricks and the mortar and everything that were holding the place up. And once all those tests were done and various engineering options were looked at for strengthening of the building as a whole, it was finally decided that base isolation was the best method for this. Some of these walls, I mean, this wall, which supports the dome, for example, is something like 5 feet thick. It's extremely thick and extremely strong. However, finding out what was behind these plaster facades was critical in coming to the conclusion that the base isolation solution was the best one for this building.
Was there ever a chance that it would have been lost? Could have been lost?
Well, council always had the option before this project started to mothball the building and put the collection into storage. Who knows what would have happened to building in long term, but when we had the option to apply for funding for the strengthening of this building and for looking after the collection and also doing the fundraising to go along with that, and the Wisdom Council felt that that was a good option to take, and so they allowed us to make these applications which would enable the strengthening of the building, and all, as Nicola said, with minimal cost to local ratepayers as well. The council making the choice to enable us to continue with the fundraising to make these applications, all of which have ultimately been successful, have led to the fact that this building will one day again be fit for purpose.
The prospect of being mothballed, that would have been a death sentence essentially, wouldn't it?
One of the facts we had to get out to the community was that this was the ratepayers. This was Plan B. This was the logical option for them, was to do the addition along with the earthquake strengthening. And the reason for that is that the government money was predicated on the fact that it was their money was to store the collection, which is the addition. So I think it's somewhere around $16 million is the cost of the earthquake strengthening plus professional fees. So that's nearly half of the entire cost of the reconstruction. So the ratepayers would have had to have looked at that if they just wanted to repair this Category 1 building compared to the $5 million that they're currently contributing towards the total redevelopment.
Right, where to next?
This back wall here is where the extension will take place. There'll be a doorway in that wall which will lead into a glass atrium, which will be the space which adjoins the two buildings. So there'll be a glass atrium there which will serve as the new official entryway into the gallery. And also it will be fantastic for civic functions, for openings and what have you. It's a space which will be available to anyone to be able to use.
Because you want it to be a community building?
It must be. No art gallery these days is ever just an art gallery. It has to be a multi-function building and be useful and accessible to community in all ways. I mean, this building itself, the Sergeant and the new wing, was closely scrutinised by architects, particularly noted iwi architect Ro Hoskins in Auckland, to make sure that it fit well as a space to observe and enact tikanga protocol as well. So the building has accessibility and usability for everyone in the community. So this area here will be a doorway. There'll be a bridge leading across that glass atrium into the new wing, which will be to the north. And all the exhibition space will be on this level that we're on now. So in the new wing, you'll see the additional exhibition space. You'll also find a classroom there as well. The ground floor will be staff administration. There will be an auditorium, cafe and various other amenities down there. Also an additional event space too. And beneath that, again, is what we were talking about earlier, which will be the enormous collection area, which Jennifer has been hard at work designing as well.
Now, here's the thing. When you're creating an addition to an historic building, does the architect try and create something sympathetic to the building, or does the architect acknowledge that it's now 2018 and different things are possible?
They are clearly very different buildings, two different types of classical building, in fact. This is, as we know, a neoclassical building that we're standing in now, but the new addition very much speaks to early 20th century classical architecture. It's a floating box. It's reminiscent of the international style, which was developed in Europe in the early part of the 20th century. In fact, at about the same time the existing Sargent was built. So they will be very complementary, but it was always designed to sit quietly behind this building. The new wing was never designed to be a feature building. It was meant to complement this one and to be functional, but also to ensure that focus was always going to be on the architectural importance of this one.
Also, another huge benefit of the redevelopment will be the fact that we'll have climate control throughout. Historically, we've had no climate control in this building, and so all the limitations that we've been working with up till this point, those limitations will be gone, and so we'll be able to meet all the international requirements. So,
And that means you can bring in touring and international shows, because that's been another limitation for you, hasn't it?
In the new wing, we're going to have special crate storage that's actually climate controlled as well, which is part of the requirements. So this is where all the staff were based, in this low-ceilinged space. So we had matting and framing down here. We had a photography studio, and also staff room was in here.
So this space was home to this, was this a storage area?
Yes, this is the collection store.
God grief.
So this, even though it looks like a wide avenue here, that was filled up with crates and paintings leaning against pillars, leaning against paintings. Every time I came down here, I wanted to shift things and fix things, but there was nowhere to shift it to. And you just had to have the confidence that that situation will be changing shortly with the redevelopment.
As you've gone through them, you know, for the move, have you found any damage done?
No damage from that we're aware of,
and
from
no dampness,
the challenging
like
storage conditions, but it's more the risk of damage that we're really concerned about.
That's a credit to you, because these are not ideal conditions.
No, not at all.
The funding from the Ministry for Culture and Heritage was predicated on the importance of the collection, a collection being one of national significance. So we needed to illustrate just why we need to move out of this situation for the sake of the collection and its longevity. I mean, it is in excess of 8,000 items in this collection, which means it's a very large proportion of New Zealand's cultural heritage sitting here. So it fell to us to look after it as best we could at the time, but it also meant that we had to think of the future and its importance, not only for Whanganui but also for New Zealand as well, and that was the basis for our application, our successful application, as it turned out, to central government.
Logistically, must have been a hell of a thing to move 8,000 plus
That was
my job. So I managed the project to relocate all the items in this basement, and also we had an off-site store as well. It was very difficult to plan because we had records for just over 5,000 items in the collection, and when we'd finished the move, we had over 8,000 items. So it just shows how difficult it was to access all the nooks and crannies in this basement. There are so many nooks and crannies. It's got its own sort of character. But it just meant that it was very difficult to properly catalogue and inventory things that were here, because they were largely, there were boxes in front of boxes kind of thing.
So there'll be some detective work when you have a chance.
Absolutely.
To unpack, yeah?
So because our kind of our remit or whatever was to get out of this building as quickly as possible to reduce the risk to the staff working in here and also reduce the risk to the collection, I decided that anything you couldn't match to an existing record easily or with confidence, our team of collection transition assistants would have to assign a number with a prefix of an X, so we called them X numbers, and we gave them each a unique identifying number, put them into our database, and that X flags it up to check later. So far we've resolved about 1,000 of these mysterious items and identified what they are, and we've been returning works to artists because they were perhaps left here after an exhibition, and maybe the artist went overseas or the artist may have passed away, and then so it's all about just trying to reunite people with their items. In other situations, the artist wishes to give that body of work to us. So it's just a matter of going through and clarifying ownership. There are items that were brought in for photography purposes, and then the person who brought them in passed away, and so it's quite a long process of just doing that research and tracking down where those items should be. And there is a certain percentage which we may never know how these items came to be in our possession. We've had the family of one artist come and analyse the initials and see if they're similar to what that artist, the way they were signing their works and things like that. So it's just a matter of grabbing the opportunities when you can.
And was it by them? I have to know.
People were a bit unsure with that one, yeah. So it's the same initials as a local artist with international standing, but we haven't been able to completely match it up with their work. You can also see all the brick arches everywhere. So all your ceiling heights are different. You've got arches. When you're moving large paintings, you had to be very, very mindful. Because the ceiling heights are so low, some artworks had to be stored on their side because you couldn't stand them upright. And we had a family come to view a portrait done by an artist who was a member of their family. Some of the family were quite elderly and they managed to make their way down the stairs because we have no lift for people. And we had a seat for them to view this painting that they'd come all this way to view, but they had to view it sideways because we were not able to stand it upright for them to view. Things like that won't be the case anymore once the redevelopment is completed.
You're talking about it being a collection of national significance.
Yeah.
Entirely it is. What are some of the key taonga that you have here?
Well, as I said, there's over 8,000 works here, but I think one of the key differences that the Sargent Collection has, which many others don't, is that we have one of the best photographic collections in the country, and some of the best internationally for that matter. Back in 1922, the then mayor contracted Frank Denton, a local photographer, to start putting together a photographic collection for the gallery, and I believe I'm right in saying that the Sargent was the first gallery in New Zealand to take seriously the idea of collecting photography as a serious collecting medium. And at that stage, in the early 20th century, one of the few art galleries in the world to do it as well. So what that meant was that Frank had managed to reach out to his various connections in Europe and North America and amassed a substantial collection of early European, early American, early British photography, which now forms the basis of our strong collection. I think outside of Auckland and Wellington, it's the largest collection in the country. But it's also significant enough that we have visiting scholars from the United States and from Europe coming to Whanganui specifically to see those things, which they don't have at home. And that is quite extraordinary. So we're very fortunate in that. And it's one of the things which we'll be able to exploit with our new facility when it comes, because we'll have roughly double the size of the exhibition space, and it will be optimal environmentally controlled spaces as well, meaning that we'll be able to have much more of the collection out for much longer periods of time for the public to enjoy.
Jennifer Taylor-Moore, Greg Anderson and Nicola Williams will have part two of our Sargent Gallery profile next week.